Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dale, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB Trade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. Today we're looking at market opportunities in a sector that is not so much unloved as unnoticed. Many investors say they want growth opportunities in their portfolio and they're looking for new and exciting stories, but smaller companies are often not well researched and they're not well understood by retail or even sophisticated investors. So to help us look at this part of the market, how it works, what to look for and some opportunities you may not have considered, Simon Herman joins us now from Wise Owl. Simon is an analyst with Wise Owl, a research provider that often provides insights for NABTrade investors. So Simon, let's start at the beginning. What characterises the small and mid-cap sector, stocks in that part of the market? What can you tell us?
Okay, well, let's start first with me explaining that there is no standard definition that could be found in a deep dictionary. The definition of a small or mid-cap differs from market to market, from sector to sector. What is considered to be a small cap in the US may be a mid cap here in Australia, simply because the market is larger and there are more companies. So one way to categorize companies is by size, also known as market cap, which is share price, essentially the worth of a company, how the market values it. So in Australia, I would say a mid cap is a company with a market cap of around $2 to $10 billion. That represents the mid cap component of the market, while anything smaller than that should be regarded as a small cap. There are many reasons why I believe the investment case for small caps is compelling. One reason is that in Australia, the economic landscape in many sectors is dominated by oligopolies, a small number of companies that dominate the market, such as Coles, Woolworths in the grocery sector. So if you look at them or even the banking industry that is dominated by the big four, it has produced strong established dividend paying blue chip stocks. But companies also tend to get lazy after a while, which opens the sector up for a disruption. And if a small company comes along with an intelligent and dynamic structure that offers a real solution to the economy or the consumer, then that can turn into a great growth story. And I personally find that exciting and beneficial for the world. Now, the hardest part in finding the right company is that there is no shortage of companies. There are 1,900 companies on the ASX with a market cap of less than 500 million. Representing only about 10% of the total value. In any given year, there are, most people don't know that, 50 to 100 companies that actually gain over 50%. Now, some of them might be large caps occasionally, but most of them aren't. So even in the year of the GFC and in 2008, 2009, there were over 10 companies that gained over 50%, even though the entire market tumbled. And that's part of the reason why small mid caps is very appealing.
That's really powerful, and I think we all understand there's really exciting stuff down there, but you know, very few of us have an understanding of how to find those little gems in the rough. So how have small caps as a sector performed historically? There's obviously some popular smaller companies funds, and certainly back through the early 2000s and even the late 90s, professional fund managers who had small cap funds, they were very popular. People liked to have some allocation to them. The performance of those, is that typical of the sector as a whole, or is it pretty obviously a stock picker's market?
I certainly think that the small mid-cap sector is a sector where the analyst or the fund manager plays a very important role. Due to the lack of coverage in mainstream media, there are often a lot of mispriced stocks amongst the micro-caps, simply because no one knows about them. They might have a great business model, but if no one hears about them, then no one buys the stock. Hence, there's a large divergence often between the real worth and how the market values the company. So the job of an analyst is to find these gems. There are more opportunities to capture value in this sector. So I would back up your statement saying that it's a stock picker sector. The small ordinaries, which is often quoted in Australia, which contains the small mid-cap component of the ASX 300, excluding the top 100 companies, has returned 20% over the past 12 months, outperforming the blue chip index, the ASX 200 or the ASX 50. But over the past 10 years, there is no return at all. We're looking at roughly a flat performance. Small mid-cap companies tend to outperform when the economy is strong, but they also tend to get punished even more if there's a downturn, which occurred obviously during the GFC, but also we had small mid-caps underperforming in 2011 and the following years, which lasted up until 2015. Only in the last 2 to 2.5 years, small caps were back in favor in Australia. If you look at the US, slightly different picture. The Russell 2000 index of small caps has matched the performance of the S&P 500, the one of the most quoted indices in the world, or even slightly exceeded over the last 40 years. So small mid-caps as a whole have performed very well.
So all of that's quite fascinating. So I'm going to be really frank and say I have very little exposure to this part of the market. I'll give you an example in a minute where I've had some exposure. Can you give us some examples of small caps that have performed really well?
Look, Gemma, you're not the only one. A lot of people, they want to have exposure to the market, but they frankly don't know where to start. So I think a lot of investors, they understand the benefits of investing in small mid-caps, but because there's a lack of coverage, they either may not have heard of a lot of these great growth companies, or they simply don't know how to value them. While if you want to read about the banks, Telstra, BHP, you'll find publications anywhere. Yeah. So it's very easy to make a decision, at least an emotional one. If you look, for example, at Technology One, TNE, a stock that Wyzowl has covered for nearly 15 years. We picked it up first in April 2004. We rated it as a buy at 55 cents. Mm-hmm. No one knew about that company back then. And we reiterated the buy advice a few times. It didn't perform at all for the first 5 years, but we saw a very strong and stable revenue and growth outlook. And then we ended up selling it in March 2017 at $5.
Wow.
So that's a typical small cap company that turned into a mid cap purely because they generated earnings. Someone might even call it a boring business in some way, but they just continue to deliver year after year. And these sort of returns are hard to find for a $50 billion blue chip company.
10 times returns, pretty powerful. You've got CSL and very little else that's really delivered that kind of...
CSL is an exceptional example.
Yeah. There's not a lot of others that deliver that kind of performance. So a comment you made when we were offline is that this is not only a stock picker's market, but it's a buy and hold market too, right? It's difficult to do a lot of active trading in this space.
Absolutely. There's a lack of liquidity. It's not as easy, depending on the size of your position, but some of these small caps and even mid caps, they tend to be traded very thinly. So buying and selling might not always be as easy. So I wouldn't say it's a trader's market. Some people might trade them and hope for, you know, a strong move on the open, but in my opinion, it's a market that requires a medium to long-term outlook.
So I love that example, because I think the idea that something's going to basically give you no performance for 5 years and then increase in value by 10 times, you know, it's hard for people to get their head around, right? It's quite challenging. I'll give you an example of risks at one end of the market. I actually inherited a very little stock. I won't name it. No one will have heard of it anyway. And it jumped around between 4 cents and about 20 cents over a 5 year period. And it jumped up and back and up and back. And a lot of that was off the back of, it was a biotechnology company. It wasn't producing any revenue. I don't think they'd made any major sales of the technology. So every time there was an announcement of any description, the stock would jump. And then when everyone worked out the announcement was probably not going to come to much, it would just fall away again. And now it would appear there's almost no liquidity and the prospects would be pretty questionable. Can you give some examples of that sort of situation? There's probably plenty where the performance is just not strong, and really when it does perform strongly, it's more likely to be sentiment driven and irrational exuberance, can we call it that, than perhaps an illustrative of a sort of a longer term growth story.
So interesting example that you mentioned there, Gemma. Small caps tend to offer risk premium in return for lower liquidity. And because of the low liquidity and the relatively small size of the company, new information such as an ASX announcement or a newspaper article can have a greater impact on the value of the securities. So on the back of an announcement, a small cap can rise 10-20% easily, which you don't really see in a large cap, unless it's extraordinary news. And we've seen a few poor examples early in the year on the ASX. There have been a few small cap tech companies that have disappointed due to poor governance or simply management without ethics, if you might want to put it that way. It's There have been a few stocks, including Big Unlimited and GetSwift, that have done damage to the industry and the reputation. And part of the job of an analyst or someone who is picking stocks is obviously to see through that. Mm-hmm. Now, we won't always get it right, but we need to have procedures in place to pick that. Now, if you are looking at a perfect example of opportunities gone wrong, the dot-com bubble is very often spoken about, and you don't even have to look too far back. It's been less than 20 years that it happened, and many growth companies simply disappeared. Mm. There was a sector that was hot, everyone bought into it, and when disruptive innovation comes along, it usually creates only a few winners, but many, many losers. Companies that just jump on the back of a movement, but they don't actually have a product that is sustainable in the long term. So only few companies are now profitable that have rallied back then, and many have just disappeared, and so did the investment.
It's I think, yes, and I think that's one of the things that puts people off the sector in general, right? It's a little bit nerve-wracking to go, this thing looks great on paper, but I don't have an acute understanding of the capability of management and all these sorts of things. So you're an analyst in this sector, you have a lot of experience in it, you know what to look for. What's your process for determining the strength and the prospects of a small company?
At Wisel, we have a fairly diligent but also simple process. I do like to keep things simple. I don't think unless you have to, there's no need to overcomplicate it. And I want to present the listener with a fairly simple 5-point checklist. Mm-hmm. But firstly, I'd like to elaborate on something I said earlier. When I said that large companies tend to get lazy, what I actually meant with that, what I was referring to, is that there is a fear of a company to cannibalize its existing revenue streams by changing something or adopting to new technology. And that's
Blockbuster and Kodak are the big famous names that we use as an example all the time of that. The Kodak had all the technology to do digital photography, but wouldn't use it because they were fearful of cannibalizing their
Correct.
Film business.
And there are still great people sitting in the management and people working hard behind the scenes, but a company like that has almost a responsibility to maintain the existing revenue streams, but that creates a risk as well. Mm. And that opens the door up for disruption and small mid-cap companies coming in and doing something better. So part one for a retail investor is to find a company with a great product or business idea that has the potential to change an entire sector, a sector that's lacking something. There's much more to it, of course. Just having a great product isn't enough. You need the right capital structure. So I'd like to summarize that in a very simple 5-step process that we sometimes go through, that is looking at the management team, the financials, potential catalysts, the share register, and also the stock price. Mm. Now, with management, you usually look at the track record. You'll find out what has the CEO, the CFO, the directors on the board, what have they achieved previously? Have they created value? Mm-hmm. And if yes, are they likely to replicate it? In terms of the financials, if there is a revenue growth trajectory, how has that evolved over time? Has revenue grown faster than earnings or the other way around? Mm-hmm. There's a few little hints that can help you find out if the product has strength and what kind of company this company could turn into in 5 years' time. Catalysts, what could drive the share price over the coming 6 to 12 months? Are there catalysts? Are there upcoming product launches? Or for a biotech company, is there a due diligence study to be released? Mm. For a small mining company, the same thing. If you look at the share register, is there a large shareholder that can support the company if it requires a capital raising? Is there a large free float? We like small caps with a free float of 20-30% or less, mm-hmm. Meaning there are a few established instos on the register and management has a large interest, and all the small retail investors that can simply sell whenever they want are very limited. So that helps in having a strong capital structure. Stock price. We believe technical and fundamental analysis go hand in hand, and it certainly makes sense to use the direction of the stock to find the right entry point. And if you tie that all together, you're already miles ahead of most other people that simply read about a stock and then go ahead and buy it.
Yeah, I probably, yes, may have been in that category in the past. So one thing we have touched on is governance, and I find in this sector, Look, I was listening to a very highly qualified fund manager recently, and she made the point that, you know, some of Australia's largest companies, let's call them the top 10, there have been major governance issues, huge governance issues that will require substantial reparations to impacted investors, impacted customers, impacted communities in some cases. So governance is an issue across the spectrum, but it's particularly an issue in the small cap sector.
Absolutely, and it has a very strong impact on the company as a whole. Mm. You've just made a great example, looking at AMP and some other financial institutions that had poor governance structures in place. It's now eventually destroying value. It's not just some kind of green fad that you have to be an ethical company with good structures in place. In my opinion, over the long term, you can only create value if you have robust structures in place, and that includes strong governance. If a large company, I apologize for my language, screws up, it will still survive usually. It still has earnings, assets, customers, and it might result in a strong share price correction, but the company will, in most cases, continue to exist. Issue that we're facing here. But with a small cap company, if there are only three or four key decision makers and they are not quite on the right foot and there's no governments in place, and we've seen a few examples early in the year on the ASX, then these companies can simply vanish. And if you invest money in this company, you will never see it again.
So that point's really so true, that you might lose 10% or 20% if investors, the market reacts strongly to a governance issue in a large cap. But in a small cap, a strong reaction means a complete wipeout for that part of
Absolutely.
Your portfolio.
And that's the risk with investing in that space.
So for retail investors who can't get access to management for fairly obvious reasons, you know, there's a very, very large sector here. There's lots and lots of stocks in it. It's very difficult to get high quality information. Do you think that there is too much risk and they should seek a professionally managed fund in this area?
That depends on your circumstances. I think it's different for any type of investor, depending on what you're trying to achieve, what your experience is, and how much time you have available. I think most investors are very clever, and if given the required time and resources, they would be perfectly able to understand companies very well. But in reality, a self-directed investor works full-time, may even have a family, and simply doesn't have the time or the access to intelligent software that facilitates the screening process. So if you are time poor, absolutely. A managed fund in the small cap space could be an appropriate solution, or getting yourself a partner such as Wise Owl, who does all the research on your behalf. Never use these sources as your only guide towards investing. Always, obviously, use your own common sense and do your reading and stay up to date of what's happening. But yeah, absolutely. If you don't have the time or expertise, I recommend to seek financial advice.
So to your point, professional advice or professional research can be really valuable because obviously big sector, lots of complex choices to be made. What are your thoughts on passive investments in this space? So our investors love ETFs for large caps. Index funds also very popular. Do they work as well in a sector where you've got a huge number of companies with very large variations in capability and prospects?
In my opinion, ETFs serve a particular purpose, and they are often a great way to diversify across a basket of securities. So with one purchase, you have instant access to a whole sector or whole market. It seems a little counterintuitive to consider an ETF in the small mid-cap space, because the reason why you invest in this space is A, to complement your blue chip portfolio with growth opportunities, and you're really looking to find these companies that can gain 5, 10x over a particular time. But so by investing in an ETF, you kind of have the outperformers as well as the underperformers in one basket. And at the same time, a lot of people underestimate the risks of ETFs. They've really only emerged over the last, seen a significant correction in the last 7 to 8 years. So they've all just gone up and up and up and up. And there's potentially also a lack of liquidity that we've seen in small corrections where ETFs would fall much more than the rest of the stock market. So it's a yes or no answer here. I think ETFs, they can serve a purpose, but you shouldn't entirely rely on them and certainly manage your exposure to that part of the sector.
So people, so one of the challenges that you've mentioned is small cap companies are also desperate to get their story out there, right? They want the market to pay attention to what they're doing and to be enthused about their prospects, but they have very real challenges in getting any attention from the mainstream press and so on, which is understandable. Because these things aren't in the business section of the paper, their rights and all those sorts of things, what are your thoughts on those? Should people be wary? Are they good quality sources of information?
My advice here is that any piece of content should be critically examined, no matter if it's the front page in the newspaper or if it's a comment in a chat room. Mm. There is always, usually, a little bit of truth to each of those comments, but since I'm spending half of my time reading and browsing through information, what I've learned is regardless of where it appears or whoever the source is, the reader should always think about why is this journalist publishing the story? Why is he, what could be driving him? Could he have an investment? Mm. Could the company have paid for this content? Which is not always a bad thing. It simply could be a solution to what you've mentioned earlier. They don't get any other exposure. But I don't like the term, but also in the time of fake news that thanks to social media has emerged in the last 5 years, investors should always double check the sources and claims before making an investment decision based on what they're reading. Doesn't matter where they read it.
I think that's a really good point. And there is a huge variety of sources out there. It's really challenging for people to think about where they get started. So I'm going to ask you this question, then I'm going to ask you for some stock tips, which we won't hold you to. I think the example you gave of Technology One, where you're saying, 5 years where it went nowhere, but then rocketed. Great example, right? So we can't hold you to this for 5 years. but first of all, any other tips for investors thinking about dipping their toes in the small cap end of the market?
Well, I guess this is the point of the interview where you're looking for some unconventional investment advice, something that you don't just find in a book or read on Investopedia. Mm. So I have two tips for you. Firstly, I personally, that's a rule for myself. Mm. If an investment keeps me up at night, sell it. If something stresses you that much holding, it might not necessarily mean that you are invested in the wrong company, but it could also simply mean that you are too leveraged towards this one investment. So at least consider your strategy. Mm. You should still be sleeping well at night. Investing shouldn't be a stressful exercise. Mm. It should be something with you think about where you want to be in 5 to 10 years time. Mm. Some people might have a shorter horizon, some might have a longer one, but if something stresses you that much, sell it. So that's one advice that I could give you and the readers, the listeners. Mm. The other one is the difference between blue chip stocks and small caps. We buy blue chips after a correction, so when they fall, but we buy small caps on the rise. I think a lot of people confuse these two. They think if a stock has fallen 20%, and especially in the mid cap, that happens quite a lot, now they offer better value. Mm. But there is often a reason why they fall. While a blue chip, it could be a market correction, but if the company keeps generating earnings and they are still out there, Telstra might potentially be a good example after having tumbled over the last year. Mm. There will come a time and place to buy Telstra again. Mm. So you do that after the dip and not after it rallied to $6. Mm. But a small cap, we look for companies that gain momentum over time, that have growing earnings, and potentially even after a breakout, that's when you buy them. Because there is still that 2x, 5x, or 10x potential to the upside. So you don't buy them after a dip.
That's a really powerful point, because we certainly from a NABTrade perspective have a very contrarian investor base. They do love to buy after a dip, but differentiating between those large cap stocks for that opportunity and small caps for an entirely different approach is really important.
Yeah, it always depends on the sector and of course the company, but that's sort of a general rule that I think most people don't know about.
Yeah, it's not one we talk about much. So a few ideas for our investors, a few things that you like the look of at the moment. We won't hold you to it because we already know that it can take 5 years for them to get going. But
that's fine. Look, we like the gold space at the moment. Gold has, over the last couple of years, sort of bottomed out and showed signs of firming. And even recently, it dipped, over $50 US dollars. in a very short period of time. But the gold companies, the mid caps on the ASX, those with a strong balance sheet, they have shown strength and they are able to generate free cash flow in the current environment. We think that, generally speaking, macroeconomic risks are elevated and stocks just had a tremendous rally that lasted since the GFC. So eventually, there'll come a change in sentiment. So the Regis resources or the Gold Road resources of this world, I think, are well positioned to deliver value over the coming years. So that's a sector we like. Consumer shares and retail shares in Australia had a very tough time because online competitors have come across and eaten up the market share. So some of these have declined sharply, but there will also come a time and place when these companies might potentially do well again.
Mm-hmm. Any examples in that space?
We've previously liked Harvey Norman, which then underperformed for a very long period of time. So we're keeping an eye on it. And potentially any other brand that you see around that could be of interest. But if any of the listeners want to read a little more about it and find out more, they can jump to wiseworld.com, sign up for a free trial. We'll give away our information for 3 weeks and they can assess it and obviously reach out to myself if they have any questions.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. I did want to say, just on your point about gold, that we were speaking to one of the chief investment strategists with a financial services organisation the other day, and he is shifting a little bit of his personal portfolio to gold for exactly the same reasons you mentioned. So that's very interesting indeed.
Just don't be overexposed, but I think a small percentage won't do any harm.
And that was exactly the point that he made. Simon, thank you so much for joining me. As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Your Wealth podcast. We always hope it's been useful to you in helping you on your path to building and preserving your wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.